It is Tuesday, November 9th, and coming up on Golf Today, CEO of the European Tour, Keith Pelley, joins us to talk about huge changes to the tour. There's a new name you have to learn, bigger purses, and what will it mean to you watching golf at home? Also, the Vare Trophy for scoring average is up for debate on the LPGA Tour. Three superstars are not eligible to win it, and Paige McKenzie isn't happy about it. She is fired up. And also, the man known as Big hops on the program to relive his big win in Houston 24 years ago. It's all ahead on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
It is Golf Today on a Tuesday. Shane Bacon with Damon Hag. And you heard Damon mention it off the top. We have some big news with the European Tour. So here's what you need to know on this Tuesday. European Tour is being rebranded as the DP World Tour, beginning at the start of the 2022 season. This will mark the end of an era for the European Tour, which was founded back in 1972. DP World, which is a Dubai-based logistics company, has sponsored the season-ending event on the European Tour since 2009.
Here's some specifics, Shane. European Tour renamed the DP World Tour beginning in 2022. Prize money to surpass $200 million, minimum $2 million for DP World Tour solely sanctioned events, minimum of 47 tournaments in 27 different countries, so truly global in nature. Expanded Rolex Series, comprised of five events, three tournaments co-sanctioned with the PGA Tour as that strategic alliance continues to grow, and it starts November 25th, 2021. And we welcome in CEO of the European Tour, Keith Pelley. Keith, first of all, congratulations on the news. What can you tell us about the nuts and bolts of this announcement?
Well, it's a landmark deal for us, and it's something that has been ongoing and we've been discussing for the last 2 years. It started back in 2018 when we first had the conversation with DP World, when we talked about having a bigger relationship and renewing our current deal with the DP Tour Championship, and that led us to a conversation about values and about innovation and inclusivity. And at the end of the day, that was the first time we actually talked about would they ever consider naming our tour and us using their brand, because we really are a global tour. And today we made that unbelievable announcement. It feels so good, and it's just going to elevate all facets of our tour, from the main tour, which is now called the DP World Tour, to the Challenge Tour, which is our feeder tour, which will also see incredible benefits from the investment from DP World.
Keith, I'm always interested in how this would impact the viewer, the golf fan at home. What are you planning on doing for the golf fan with this announcement and added exposure to the new DP World Tour?
Well, like I said, one of the things that DP World were most interested in is our commitment to innovation and our commitment to inclusivity. So our innovation comes with short form content. So that is something that we will not only increase, but we will also create more people creating more content, if that makes sense. So that's something we're really excited about. And then our commitment to golfers with a disability was something that they were also really interested in. And next week is the culmination of five events this year with golfers with a disability at the DP World Tour Championship. And we're going to invest in that and bring that to consumers in a much bigger way going forward. So you'll see more short-form content, you'll see more innovation and more inclusivity and our commitment to that. In terms of on the main tour, yes, there will be more prize fund, there will be more playing opportunities for our members. That's what it means for our members. But what it means also for the consumer is we have additional capital, additional investment to invest in the product, whether that means more cameras, more technology. They're a very, they're a global technology company. So that is a key performance index for our partnership going forward. So there's a lot that the consumer will see, and there's a lot that will benefit the players as well.
I'd imagine a topic of conversation in the walls of your offices is how to bring back the European Tour stars, the Rorys, the Rahms, the Hovlands of the golfing world. Do you see this announcement bringing some of those names back, at least in a part-time form?
Well, I think, Shane, that I think that has changed based on our relationship now with the PGA Tour. The strategic alliance that we signed in November of 2020 was a game changer for us, and I believe for global golf. And we're working so closely with the PGA Tour now on what makes the most sense for the players and what makes the most sense for the consumer. You saw our first big step this year when we will make the Scottish Open, the Genesis Scottish Open, into a co-sanctioned event. And then Barbasol and Barracuda on the PGA Tour will also have European Tour players. So I think as far as where the players play, that is going to depend on how we can build the alliance and build the strategy with both the PGA Tour and the European Tour in a way that benefits both sides. And to be totally candid, our respective teams were meeting last week in Florida. They're meeting next week in the UK. There's a lot of conversations going on and lots of news that will happen over the next couple of years.
Keith, which begs the question, how much deeper can this strategic alliance get with the PGA Tour from what you've already started?
Well, I think we've just started, Damon. I think we've announced three events at this particular time. We now have, to use a business phrase, 11 work streams going between the two organizations, and we're on daily conversations. I have full transparency over the PGA Tour business. They have full transparency over our business. They are no longer competitors in any such way. They're complete partners. And when you have that mindset, anything is possible. And when you have a leader like Jay Monahan, who I believe has incredible vision and great integrity, that only bodes well for not only the game, the consumers, the players. It is something significant for the European Tour Group, of which our new main tour, DP World, is a main part of.
Keith, there's been a lot of noise over the last 18 months about additional professional golf tours. Is this anyway a reaction to what we're seeing with those types of movements?
Shane, as I said, this is a conversation that's been ongoing for the past 2 years. And it started when we started recognizing that we've been here in the Middle East. We came to Dubai in 1989. We've been here 32 years. A partner in DP World is a key partner. They've been a partner for 10 years. They wanted to grow the partnership. They wanted to get bigger in the world of golf. We wanted them to do that. And that's what we did. And it spent 2 years doing it. So I would say this isn't something that just happened overnight in reaction to anything or any noise that you're hearing out there right now.
Well, Keith, today is a big news story, but it wasn't that long ago that the European Tour was being hard hit by COVID, canceling tournaments. Over the years, rumors of the European Tour's supposed demise. How challenging has it been?
Well, it's been, you know what? In 2020, at the beginning of 2020, was a real challenging time. And now we come out of it with incredible momentum. We changed the way we operated our business. We focused on new ways of generating revenue, a lot of that with short-form content. Then we struck a strategic alliance with the PGA Tour. We had unbelievable partners like Rolex and BMW. And then this with DP World. So to be totally candid, yes, back in 2020, we went, wow, you know, what's next with COVID? And now we're coming out of it with a smile on our face, hoping the pandemic is somewhat behind us. And we have a tremendous amount of momentum, and it's a momentous day today announcing the DP World Tour.
Keith, for golf fans of a certain vintage, they'd be surprised to hear about how deep this relationship is between the PGA Tour and the European Tour, considering the history of rivalry. What does it say about kind of the changing dynamic between the two? Could you have ever envisioned this day 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Oh, maybe not. I can tell you that that the Ryder Cup will still be and will always be a fierce battle, regardless of how close we get with the PGA Tour. And obviously, our members play on both tours, but it still is predominantly a U.S.-based tour. But I can say that, you know, everything changes. If you're not prepared to modify your business, you're going to fall behind. And change is very, very hard, but change can be incredibly beneficial if you have the right mindset in going into a partnership like we have. And that started with Jay and myself, who both felt that that golf was a little bit too fractured, and us working closer together was better for, like I said, our members. We're both members organizations, and ultimately the consumer. So that's what we're going to continue to do and continue to be to strive to make global golf better. We're in a really good period of time now when golf has been seen coming out of the pandemic as one of the great growth sports. And I think it's the greatest sport. It's the one that allows inclusivity. It has so many health benefits. And if we're working together, we can focus on what's good in the game as opposed to competing against each other.
Keith, Damon and I sit up here daily talking about golf, but at the end of the day, we are golf fans and we're big European Tour golf fans. We've been impressed with what you guys have done on social media and introducing some of the ideas that are now standard in the game. So congrats on a big day. Congrats on the news, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Shane. Thanks, Damon.
And the aforementioned commissioner of the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan, released this statement: thanks to the support of longstanding partner DP World, today's announcement significantly elevates the European Tour on a global basis. We are excited for the continued growth and evolution of the European Tour, as well as the momentum this provides toward our strategic alliance. I've said before that our respective tours are positioned to grow together over the next 10 years faster than we have at any point in our existence. And today's announcement is another point of proof in those efforts.
How about world number one, John Rahm, jumping on social media today. He said, thrilled to see the announcement with DP World. Exciting times ahead. John Rahm, 6 times a winner on the European Tour and will be integral in this merger.
Tell you what, this is big news. My biggest takeaway is that the European Tour has faced so many challenges over the last 10, 15 years, especially the last couple, when you think about COVID-19 and the canceling of tournaments, and to see them come through on the other side, to see this strategic alliance with the PGA Tour. I've been to Rolex Series events. I've covered those. They are different. They are bigger. They are enhanced. This is positioning the European Tour, I think, in a position of strength.
You know, we asked Keith a little bit on this about some of the players, and I do wonder what we will see in terms of the big-name players, the John Rahms and the Rory McIlroys and the Victor Hovlands. I mean, these are who people buy tickets to go out and watch, and they play most of their professional golf on the PGA Tour. So with what we're seeing in the strategic alliance, with kind of the expanded role in terms of what the European Tour can be when we change over, and with the expansion of money, I mean, let's be honest, what are professional athletes interested in? Bigger purses, more money for what they're able to do. I'll be interested to see how many more events, if any, those types of players add to their schedule. I expect it to be more events on what will become the DP World Tour.
And it sounds like the tours will continue to work together so both tours can patronize each other and go if a European Tour player wants to play on the PGA Tour or vice versa, to make it easier. 47 tournaments in 27 countries. It is a truly global tour. And I tell you what, you know, Bobby Jones had to take a boat to play golf in 1930. You know, go overseas. This is a different time. The stars can travel. Yes, it can be taxing at times, but I think this opens up pathways in different ways for the stars of the PGA Tour who are from the European continent or who want to play in Europe. It'll make it easier for them and more lucrative for them to do so.
Can we just take a moment to give a shout out to the European Tour and what they've been able to do just over the last few years with their, I'd say, ability to be creative, with their ability to not be scared about trying stuff out. I mentioned social media as we thanked Keith at the end. What they've done with their social media in terms of bringing interest to golf, bringing interest to the European Tour. I just wrote down a few of them. The Fake Pundit, which was amazing. The Angry Golfer, Mannequin Challenge. You remember the kind of the ball, they had the Rory thing with the washing machine, a hole-in-one challenge. They've embraced social media. They've embraced some of the things that took years for other organizations and for other associations to embrace. The European Tour, I've thought, has been really, really ahead in terms of this, and I hope that continues. I hope it expands, because it seems like that's what Keith envisions as well.
My favorite social media bit was when they had a kid who's celebrating a birthday, and they got Justin Rose Henrik Stenson, Beef Johnson, and Martin Keimer. You know, they were on a car together, and they were wishing the kid happy birthday, and Justin said, you want to see our medals? And said, Henrik's is a different color. It was just really, really well done. But even beyond the social media, which is an important part of this, it's the fact that they've been able to elevate the purses in a time. And I say there were rumors of the European Tour's demise. Those were not tiny rumors. I mean, the European Tour, I believe, was fighting. I've been over there. I've seen the tournaments and how different that they are now and how they feel, especially the Rolex Series events. There's pageantry with them, increased purses with them. I love those events. I think the Scottish Open, the Irish Open, you know, we're talking about the home of golf. We're talking about the soul of golf in a lot of ways. I think it's very important that the golf fan, the consumer in the United States, is able to wake up on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday morning with their cup of coffee, we call it coffee golf, and watch European Tour golf. I love it. I think a lot of people at home love it as well.
You've got to be incredibly talented to be a professional golfer, but you also need opportunity. And we're going to dive into Korn Ferry Tour Finals here in just a bit and Q School and everything that goes down with that. It's about opportunity, and that's why we celebrate it. And more money and bigger purses on both the European Tour and the Challenge Tour and beyond those types of tours, even into mini tour and beyond. This gives players an opportunity. This keeps the dream alive for two or three more years. You have a great week or a couple of great weeks, and all of a sudden you're set for the next season to go out there and continue to chase the dream, because certain players turn professional, and it's very, very easy. And certain players, it takes a decade to get comfortable in that world and to understand what it's like to be a professional golfer and then to lean on your talents. Yeah. So to me, I see a lot of opportunity here. And let's not, you know, forget the fact that this isn't the first name change we've seen in professional golf.
Sure.
I mean, you can go through tour after tour after tour in terms of name changes. Just some notable ones. You know, you go to 2003, the Senior Tour becoming the Champions Tour, now PGA Tour Champions. In 93, the Ben Hogan Tour to the Nike Tour. It's been the buy.com, the Nationwide, the web.com, and now the Korn Ferry Tour. In 2012, the LPGA Futures Tour becoming the Symetra Tour.
We'll get used to saying DP World Tour, but I tell you what, I mean, there was a time when we thought of the PGA Tour and the European Tour as rivals, maybe not necessarily to the Capulets and Montagues extent, but clearly Keith Pelley, the leader of the European Tour, and Jay Monahan, the leader of the PGA Tour, they are working together in cohesion. They like each other, and they are growing the game, in my mind, in a global sense. And so far, they seem to be doing a very, very good job.
Truly like each other.
They
truly like each other. Play golf together.
Yeah.
Keith complimenting Jay before we got the interview
going. Jay going on his,
This would have not been thought of 5-10 years ago.
Correct.
A nice Shakespeare reference there, too.
Thank
as well. Coming up, player reaction is pouring into the news of the European Tour's rebranding. Rex Hager going to join the program as he catches up with some of the stars of the European Tour. Back on Golf Today, Damon Hack and I just talking about the difference in muting and blocking social media accounts. You would never mute. You would never block Thomas Bjorn. Sent this out on Twitter. Brilliant news for the European Tour announcing DP World as a title sponsor for the tour will be huge for the future. Wish I was 25 again, Thomas.
Don't we all?
Bjorn, Padraig Harrington also jumping on social media. Great day for the DP World Tour. Well done to all involved.
All right, let's welcome in Rex Hager, senior writer for Golf Channel from Houston. Rex, what are you hearing from the players on the ground about this European Tour news?
Damon, this is particularly encouraging for players who play both the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour, as Keith just pointed out in his interview, and they pointed out it's been a difficult 2 years in Europe between the pandemic and the global economic crisis. This is a ray of sunshine, really, is the way it was described to me. We had a chance to catch up with two very high-profile members from Europe to get their reaction to today's news.
To be honest, I only read a little bit on it. I didn't know much about it. And obviously, I've seen the emails from Keith Pelley this morning. I think it's great for the European Tour players. Obviously, prize funds are going to be increased, which is a huge positive. Title sponsor, DP World. It's big news for the tour. I think, you know, the European Tour throughout COVID and coming out of COVID this year, you know, there's been a lot of events that, you know, are not up to the standard that I think the tour is at or should be at. And it's nice to see that, you know, at least $2 million prize funds. So I just feel I'm delighted for, you know, everybody that plays the tour full-time. I'm obviously very fortunate. I play in the PGA Tour as well. So, you know, I can come and play big tournaments week in, week out, whereas, you know, those guys are out there trying to grind out a living. You know, happy for the caddies as well. Like, you know, the caddies out there are struggling to make ends meet, I'm sure, and it's a tough life. People obviously see the glamour side of things and to see the top of world golf and, you know, to see the everything that comes with that. But, you know, when you look at the guys out there, you know, playing for the card in Europe this week, which is, you know, it's the final event of the regular season in Europe, it's a tough slog out there. So it's good news for everyone, and, you know, I'm happy to be a part of it. I'm happy to be a part of the DP World Tour, as I said, the European Tour, but, you know, it's the DP World Tour now, and, excited for what the future holds, I suppose.
It used to be known as the Volvo Tour back in the day, and now it's got a new title sponsor or tour sponsor that's going to make it be in the DP World Tour. So, good news for the European Tour brand, and, I think it is a natural progression given that we played so many tournaments across the globe on that tour for decades.
Given the fact that next season half the events are going to be played outside of Europe anyway, is this a better reflection of what a World Tour is?
Yeah, look, I think... the European Tour, since I've been playing it, has not just been the European Tour. I've played all over the world, you know, Australia, Asia, you know, the Middle East. I've been on the European Tour now 10 years or 12 years. And, it's pretty much, it is a very global tour. And, you know, hopefully, like I said, just big events keep coming and gives people a lot of opportunities to play in big events and, you know, become better golfers.
It's been a rough 18 months, especially for the guys, playing mainly on the what used to be known as the European Tour. It was a lot of restrictions. It was hard to travel, more so than in many other places of the world. So, it's been rough. So good news to come out on the other side of the pandemic, to a degree at least, and to get that strong relationship built with the DP World.
Now, both players also talked about the alliance that Keith just talked about between the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, pointing out that there will be three events co-sanctioned between those two circuits, including the Scottish Open and two events in the United States, which gives both Shane and Henrik plenty to look forward to in 2022. Damon?
Rex Hager with reaction on the ground from Houston from a couple of major championship winners. Now coming up next, two events left on the LPGA Tour in Florida. A lot on the line for the best in the world. Paige McKenzie joins next. She's mad, debating the season-ending awards, including the Bear Trophy, when Golf Today returns.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
And then there were two events left on the LPGA Tour schedule, both in the state of Florida. Pelican Women's Championship Thursday through Sunday, defending champ Se-Young Kim, and the CME Group Tour Championship down in Naples, November 18th to the 21st. Defending champ is Jin Young Ko. Another name you'll see coming up, fresh off her win on the Ladies European Tour. Lydia Ko in the field at this week's Pelican Women's Championship, teeing it up will allow Ko to satisfy the minimum number of rounds to be eligible for the LPGA's scoring title.
Talking about the Bear Trophy, a look at the standings, and this is where it starts to get very complicated, so pay close attention here. You see, there are a lot of arrows next to some of the big names on this list. Those are ineligible players based on minimum rounds played. You see Nelly ineligible, Jin Young Ko ineligible, MB Park ineligible. There, Lydia Ko sits at fourth. Why are they ineligible, D? Well, it's because they don't meet the minimum rounds asked. That, of course, is 70 rounds needed to be played to be eligible, or 70% of rounds eligible for the issue at the bottom of the screen. Seven events this year on the LPGA have been canceled, so that is seven less events to get to 70 rounds. And this is something that had Paige McKenzie fired up a month ago.
I am actually livid at how this has come down this season, because in 2020 we ran into the same thing. Se-Young Kim actually had the lowest stroke average. He had 68.6 over the season. Now it was again shortened, and she spent time in Korea, so she only played 9 of the, I think, 18 events, so 50% of the events. Danielle Kang ended up winning the Bear Trophy with a full stroke greater in the stroke average. That happened 2020. I get it, COVID year. Now we're in 2021, where the best case scenario, it looks like the fourth person on the list is going to win the Bear Trophy. That's just wrong. And the minimum required rounds, we're looking at 70 that's required, or 70% of the schedule. To put that into context to what, for example, the PGA Tour does on just their minimum requirement is 15 rounds of over 40. So they're not even close to 70% requirement. And then the LPGA Tour schedule is also significantly more international. 12 of the 34 events are outside the United States. The demands on these players' travel schedules and working their way around the globe is enormous. So I think the 70% threshold is much too high. We've seen it last year. We're going to see it potentially affecting three players this year. I think it's something that needs to be looked at and evaluated moving forward, because I think when they set that 70% number or the 70-round number, it may have been before the LPGA really increased their significant global travel schedule.
And Paige McKenzie joins us on this Tuesday. Paige, last month you were livid. What's the state of your lividness now as we're here with two events left on the schedule?
I'm still fired up. When you consider two events left, eight rounds left, you might think, well, there's probably quite a few players that have reached that 70-round threshold. I mean, we're at the end of the season, right? In the top 50 on the scoring average, only five players have actually completed 70 rounds so far this season. And when you consider there is cuts, and you may end up with only two rounds this week, and four rounds is guaranteed for the following week, you're still fighting an uphill battle. If all of those players in that 50 complete eight rounds, only 26 of the top 50 on the scoring average list would be eligible to be considered. Just over 50%. To me, that screams that these eligibility requirements are wrong. They do not reflect full-time play out here on the LPGA Tour. And I think that's the key here, guys, and that's why it's important, is the reason you have requirements is you don't want part-time players winning season-long races. These players that we're discussing and talking about at the top of the scoring list, they're not part-time players, and they deserve the recognition for the solid play this season.
Paige, I mean, this is not just career-altering issues here. I mean, for somebody like Nelly Korda, this could be legacy-altering in terms of her, as we see here, leading the Vera Trophy standings with two events left and going to be ineligible to actually win this. I mean, these are parts of a Hall of Fame resume.
That's right. The LPGA Tour Hall of Fame, the hardest probably Hall of Fame to get into, is 27 points, and you do get a point for the Vera Trophy that goes towards that eligibility. You get 1 point for each official win, 2 points for a major, and then a Player of the Year point, as well as the Vera Trophy point. And interestingly, in 2014, Stacey Lewis, she swept all the season-long awards, and she said this. She said, "What these awards show is who plays the most consistent throughout the entire year. I think scoring average is probably the best indicator of who did that the entire year."
Paige, how did this...
Guys, this is insanity. If you have the best player of the year by that definition, not getting recognition, not getting a Hall of Fame point, not getting maybe a sponsorship endorsement bonus based on winning it, why is it even here? What is this in existence for if you're not going to have it reflect the players that actually reach that goal?
Well, Paige, how did this happen? How did we get here? Is this COVID-related? Is this transitional related with Mike Wan stepping aside and Molly Marcoux-Simon taking over? You know, who was mining the store? Why wasn't this taken care of before we arrived here to see Nelly Korda and NB Park and Jin Young Ko ineligible for one of the most important accolades on the LPGA Tour?
That's a great question, and I don't know whether it's just been a slow change as the LPGA schedule has evolved and the travel has created more time demands. I think it just needs to be reevaluated. When you look at Nelly Korda's season, this is the other point that bothers me, is that she played Solheim Cup. That's effectively another four rounds that she's committed towards the LPGA product, that she's paying her dues on the LPGA Tour. She's satisfying those requirements. She played the Olympics. It's not considered an LPGA event, but the LPGA cleared their schedule to allow their players to compete in that event, and certainly it doesn't hurt as an ambassador of the game. And then when you also consider, and this is aside from just Nelly this year, but if you also consider missed cuts, obviously don't count towards it. last year, NB Park actually had a better scoring average than Danielle Kang. They played the exact same number of events, but because NB Park missed a couple of cuts, she became ineligible. I just think we're on such a fine line of players even completing what's required. It seems insane because they are all, in this category, full-time LPGA players. There's no one in here that's played only 10 rounds that's trying to win the Vera Trophy.
Paige, we praise the LPGA Tour a lot for a lot of the stuff they do, but this isn't the first issue in terms of rulings. I mean, you think about what Sofia Popov went through just a couple of years ago. I mean, is there something to be said about adjustments for tours when things happen? I mean, we just went through a global pandemic. You lose 7 events. No adjustment being made here feels like they didn't think it all the way through for the entire season.
Yeah, you wonder. And I just think after the mistake of 2020 and knowing what had happened with it, and I get it, maybe they weren't thinking about it because the season itself was shortened, that maybe you would have reconsidered after 2020 that the eligibility requirements. I think moving forward, it has to be looked at. I think this is so egregious in not recognizing the best players on tour and giving them their due. It's hard to change on the fly, and I understand that. The rules are written at the beginning of the year. You abide by them, and you tell your players, you notify your players that these are the requirements. It's impossible, I feel like, to change it on the fly. That wouldn't be fair. But I do believe moving forward, it should be looked at.
Definitely looking forward to hearing what Lydia Ko, the other players, Nelly Korda, Jin Young Ko, NB Park, all of them think about the situation that the LPGA finds us in with 2 events. Paige, we appreciate your passion. You saw this coming last month, and you're still fired up now. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Welcome back to Golf Today. It's another big hour. It's a Tuesday. Damon Hack alongside Shane Bacon. Here's what you need to know on this Tuesday. Big news today. The European Tour is being rebranded as the DP World Tour, beginning at the start of the 2022 season. This will mark the end of an era for the European Tour, which was founded in 1972. DP World, which is a Dubai-based logistics company, has sponsored the season-ending event on the European Tour, which has been held in Dubai since 2009.
Yeah, just kind of focusing on what we're going to see with the renamed DP World Tour. Prize money to surpass $200 million, minimum of 47 tournaments in 27 different countries. Truly a global and worldwide tour. Expanded Rolex Series comprised of 5 events. 3 tournaments co-sanctioned with the PGA Tour, and it all starts November 25th, 2021. Let's hear some of the sound around the renaming from the first hour.
The strategic alliance that we signed in November of 2020 was a game changer for us, and I believe for global golf. And we're working so closely with the PGA Tour now on what makes the most sense for the players and what makes the most sense for the consumer. You saw our first big step this year when we will make the Scottish Open, the Genesis Scottish Open, into a co-sanctioned event. And then Barbasol and Barracuda on the PGA Tour will also have European Tour players. So I think as far as where the players play, that is going to depend on how we can build the alliance and build the strategy with both the PGA Tour and the European Tour in a way that benefits both sides. And to be totally candid, our respective teams were meeting last week in Florida. They're meeting next week in the UK. There's a lot of conversations going on and lots of news that will happen over the next couple of years.
To be honest, I only read a little bit on it. I didn't know much about it. And obviously, I've seen the emails from Keith Pelly this morning. I think it's great for the European Tour players. Obviously, prize funds are going to be increased, which is a huge positive. Title sponsor DP World. It's big news for the tour. I think, you know, the European Tour throughout COVID and coming out of COVID this year, you know, there's been a lot of events that, you know, are not up to the standard that I think the tour is at or should be at. And it's nice to see that, you know, at least $2 million prize funds. So I just feel I'm delighted for, you know, everybody that plays the tour full time. I'm obviously very fortunate to play in the PGA Tour as well. So, you know, I can come and play big tournaments week in, week out, whereas, you know, those guys are out there trying to grind out a living. Happy for the caddies as well. Like, you know, the caddies out there are struggling to make ends meet, I'm sure, and it's you know, it's a tough life. People obviously see the glamour side of things and to see the top of world golf and, you know, to see the everything that comes with that. But, you know, when you look at the guys out there, you know, playing for the card in Europe this week, which is, you know, it's the final event of the regular season in Europe, it's, you know, it's a tough slog out there. So it's good news for everyone. And, you know, I'm happy to be a part of it. I'm happy to be a part of the DP World Tour, as I would say, the European Tour. But, you know, it's the DP World Tour now. And, yeah, you know, excited for what the future holds, I suppose.
It's been a rough 18 months, especially for the guys, you know, playing mainly on the what used to be known as the European Tour. It was a lot of restrictions. It was hard to travel, more so than in many other places of the world. So, yeah, it's been rough. So good news to come out on the other side of the pandemic, to a degree at least, and to get that strong relationship built with the DP World.
Whenever there's big news in golf, important to speak with our own Jaime Diaz. Jaime, what in your mind was most significant about today's announcement?
Well, if I'm a player who's been sought after by, you know, an opposing league, like Greg Norman's league right now, for example, it got a lot harder to leave, I think, because the security, the prestige, the convenience of the PGA Tour and the European Tour in this world of the Strategic Alliance has expanded dramatically today because of the DP World Tour. And I think life got better for European Tour players. But it probably also got better, in a sense, down the line for PGA Tour players, probably because there'll be more crossover now, I'd imagine, with co-sanctioned events. And I think it's, you know, the timing is what's significant. I'm not sure if this was the original intention, but I think, you know, this alliance definitely, or this expansion definitely, is an answer to the offers coming into the players' way from the tours that are they're trying to recruit them right now.
I mean, what do you think this means for the long-term future of the European Tour?
Well, I think, you know, the European Tour has been scrappy all along. The Ryder Cup was always so important to the European Tour because it was really the thing they could hang their hat on and say, look, we are equivalent or close to the PGA Tour. I think that distance has been increasing over time simply because most of the best players in the world are going to the PGA Tour, and the European Tour has had to struggle with smaller size purses, and, you know, going all over the world, the venues haven't been great. And so I think this improves all of that, improves the prize money, improves the venues, it improves the fields. And suddenly the European Tour, I think, is closer to the PGA Tour again than it's ever been, at least in the next few years, in terms of their improvement and the way that, you know, their direction is going right now.
I mean, so what do you see as the future for this alliance between the European Tour and the PGA Tour? Because clearly Keith Pelley and Jay Monahan like each other, like working together and have a great relationship.
Well, I think, you know, they're closing ranks against any sort of threat. And I think co-sanctioned events is something that appeals to players. We see it in Scotland and now at Barbasol and Barracuda. I think that'll expand, and I think you'll see more PGA Tour players playing in Europe. That will strengthen Europe as well, and more European players being able to come over to the PGA Tour and gain points for themselves there. So I think it just makes the two tours seem like a unified front right now. And that really helps the European Tour because, relatively speaking, it was the weaker tour, and it got stronger today.
The great Jaime Diaz. By the way, Jaime, in my ear, two compliments already about the sweater choice today. Two compliments in my ear about what you're wearing. We appreciate the time.
Thank you, bud.
Dee, I mean, this is news. It is news in the golf world. And you and I are always trying to dive deeper into what this means. What does it mean for fans? What does it mean for people that experience and love the game of golf? When you look at what could happen from this and what could come from this, how does this benefit a golf fan and a golf fan interest in the European Tour going forward?
Golf fans, sports fans are always looking for something new, different ways to consume the product that they want to watch, whether you're a football fan, or F-U-T-B-O-L, or American football, or if you're a golf fan or a baseball fan, you're looking at different ways to consume product. I think this strengthens the European Tour. I think their alliance with the PGA Tour tells me that it'll be easier for each tour to patronize the other, especially if you're a European who now lives in the United States. And you have to think that there are some European players who feel a little bit guilty about not, you know, patronizing the home tour back in the old continent. I think this is a growth move for the European Tour. I think it strengthens it in the years going forward. And clearly, and this is new to me as someone who covered the game back when the PGA Tour and the European Tour were rivals, we are seeing a working relationship that's still in its infancy that has a lot of room to grow.
Yeah, I mean, it's something you've brought up a lot is the fact that the European Tour and the PGA Tour were completely different entities for a long time.
Yes.
They were not friends with each other. I mean, you were the European Tour, European Tour player. I play on the PGA Tour. To see it get closer and closer by the day, to see this relationship grow is important for golf. And Jaime mentioned it. I mean, you can't help but look past what's been rumbling. I mean, because there have been a lot of rumbles in and around the golf world of what's going to happen and what's going to get announced. And you're seeing both the PGA Tour and the European Tour pushing things forward maybe quicker than they wanted to make sure that they don't lose big superstars and big names that they want to have on their tours.
They're closing ranks. They're throwing some gators in the moat. I mean, let's be honest. They're protecting the product. The PGA Tour and the European Tour are protecting their product. I mean, we all know about the confidence in what you have in trying to have these tours and the competition that is around. And we've talked about it. Competition, hopefully, improves the product. And we're seeing that this won't just be for the stars, but even for the players in the 75 to 125. And I thought Shane Lowry, Open Champ, put it beautifully. How about the caddies?
The caddies,
I mean, yeah, that's a great line and something maybe we don't think about week to week when we talk about this great game. I think this is a move to close ranks, to protect the product on the PGA Tour and the European Tour, and I think the players and those close to the game will benefit.
I'm sure we'll hear plenty more from some of the players, some big names out this week in Houston. Speaking of Houston, next we'll have a past champ chat. Big joins the show. Talk about his victory. That man was great in playoffs.
He's big.
Don't want to mess with him in playoffs.
Back on Golf Today. Time now to take a look at some stars in the Lone Star State. Y'all, Teddy G said y'all first, so I'll throw one out. How about 1997 Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Houston Open? That's Phil Blackmar. Big. Grabbed his third PGA Tour victory and first since 1988. All three of his wins, by the way, came in playoffs. All three came with a birdie on the first extra hole. Beat Kevin Sutherland from Sacramento.
A lot of notable names in the list of the historical Houston Open. Phil Mickelson, a winner in 2011. VJ, three times a champ. Fred Couples, David Duvall, Phil Blackmar, Payne Stewart, Gary Player, and Arnold Palmer, a winner in 57 and 66.
Yes, indeed. It's time now for our past champ chat. We welcome in the winner back in 1997. Known as Big Phil Blackmar. How are you, pal? It's great to see you.
Yeah, great. It's good to see you guys, too. There's one name that stood out on that list. It did look like it fit quite as well as the others.
Well, that's okay. We want to take you through, if you will. This is our first past champ chat, and we want to dive through some of the highlights from the victory. If you will go through some of the highlights with us, if you're okay with that.
Absolutely, sure.
Okay, let's go back to 1997. Let's go back. You ready for this?
I'm ready. Let's go back.
1997 Houston Open. Phil Blackmar, final pairing with Kevin Sutherland. We'll go to the par 4-12. Phil, take us through the week. What was working? What was it?
Well, it was an interesting week. I had just started finding my swing the week before in Greensboro. Frank Nabilo won the event, but I had a really nice Sunday and told my wife that I was close. I kind of figured something out with my swing. And an interesting tidbit for you, on Thursday I shot 66 in the opening round, jumped on a plane, flew home to watch my son play in a baseball game, and then flew back the next morning on Friday for my second round.
So you
this is a good one, right? This is a good one right here. This is where I chipped it in the water.
How do you bounce back from something like this, Big?
You know what? I woke up that morning, that next morning, Monday morning, about 3 o'clock, and I said, was that a yellow line or a red line? Where I dropped that, about panicked.
All right, so we go to the 18th. This tester for par to force a playoff.
I'd hit it in the back bunker on my second and blasted out to there. And I actually one putted 11 of my last 13 holes that day.
How about that? Now, you're trying to beat someone who hadn't won on the PGA Tour, first playoff hole, competing against Linus, Kevin Sutherland, who had the towel always hanging out on his bag. You kind of, what's going through your mind? What's your mindset in this playoff?
Well, my mindset in playoffs, in a sudden death playoff, was just try to make birdie as quickly as you could, because you may not get another chance. And so it's take dead aim. And the 18th hole there at the Woodlands is a very difficult par 4, 3 wood off the tee, but the second shot to a shallow portion of the green, all carry over water. And I played a beautiful six iron there from 188 yards.
What was it like?
That's my dad, my son, Philip, there.
What was it like for you competing in that era? And I've talked to you. When you came out on the PGA Tour, you had Jack and Watson and Lanny and Hale Irwin. I mean, you had some ballers with some sharp elbows out there, Big.
Yeah, it was a different time at that, you know, back then. I'm not saying one's better than the other. It was just different. You know, when I first came on tour, guys, in 1985, you could keep your card, finish in the top 125, and not make enough money to basically cover your expenses, even on tour, let alone at home. It took $38,000, I think, that year to finish in the top 125. So it was a little more cutthroat. Guys kind of dog-eat-dog, you know, hey, I got to get my share because there's not enough for everybody.
Phil, I was reading through some old articles about the win. Gary Van Sickle wrote this in Sports Illustrated after victory. Then there was all the dumb stuff he got away with. He whiffed a chip, bounced another in a lake, hit a drive out of bounds, had to take an unplayable lie after mashing a three wood into some underbrush when trying to get to a par five and two. I mean, we only need about four of those stories, if you would.
Well, the whiff chip was on the third hole on Friday or Saturday. I had a tough downhill chip over a bunker towards water, and my ball was sitting up really high in the grass in the rough. And I laid the face open, and I went right under it, and the ball went straight down. And then I got it up and down out of the divot for bogey. The out of bounds was actually a two iron from the fairway bunker on the 15th, going for the green, hooked it out of bounds. There was a lot of stuff going on. I had consecutive chip ins playing with Larry Rinker on Friday on the 11th and 12th holes, called the second one. Had all sorts of things happening.
How much do you recognize the game that you played for so many years when you watch PGA Tour golf today?
It's the same, but very different. It's totally different. Back then, you know, I grew up where curve was your friend. You used curve to get around the golf course. If your swing didn't feel great or if a particular shot didn't feel good, you would use curve. Well, today, the guys are working on these big, hard swings where the ball doesn't really curve that much. They launch it high in the air. The wind doesn't affect it nearly as much, less spin. So they don't play the game, I think, strategically the same as we did. We had to kind of work our way around the course a little bit more. Today, they hit it so far, and they're such great athletes that, you know, all these guys have so much speed in their golf swing that they play from point A to point B and don't use the ground as much. Hal Sutton has come out a lot of times talking about how he misses the game where you actually use the ground to work the ball back to hole locations and that sort of thing. I played around with Calvin Peet in the Memorial one year, and Calvin couldn't fly his driver 230 yards. And he shot the easiest 68 that day, and he landed every approach shot in the perfect spot of the green and followed the contours back to the hole. It was a spectacular round of golf. And you just don't see that style of play anymore, but that doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It's just different.
Phil, you won three PGA Tour events, all in playoffs, all with birdies on the first extra hole. And I know we call you Big. I could see Playoff Phil being a nickname. Sure. Are you into Playoff Phil as a possible second nickname?
Hey, I've been called everything. It beats tow truck what I was called growing up.
All right, we got some questions about your victory back in 1997. It's time to quiz the champ. We're going to ask you some questions just about that week, see how well you remember it.
He's pretty smart.
Okay.
All right, here we go, Big. 1997 Houston Open, that was your third and final PGA Tour victory. How many years did you go between wins? A little math question for you.
It was about 9.5, I think. 88 was my previous victory.
Yeah, it's correct. 9, the Provident Classic in August of 88 to May of 97. So we're off and running.
Very well done. 1 for 1. All right, 1997 season. You had two other top 10s that season. Can you name the other top 10s?
No clue.
No clue. All right, we got research. We have research here. PGA Championship. You finished in a tie for 6th in the Oldsmobile Classic.
I should remember the PGA because that was at Wingfoot. Justin Leonard won. That was actually, I think, my best finish in a major. And I had a tremendous up and down in the last hole to make par and stay in that position inside the top 10. And one of my best rounds came Wingfoot. You know how hard that golf course is with the rough so deep. On Friday's round, I hit two fairways, statistically hit two fairways. And they weren't all on the edges of the fairways because I got it up and down with a wedge 5 times from 100 yards and shot 68 that day.
Remembers a lot of details. Maybe we should have asked you that. But I got one for you about that PGA Championship. So that season you tied for 6th. Do you remember who you tied for 6th with?
Oh, Maruyama might have been up there, I think. I played with him on Friday. No, I don't recall.
A couple fairway finders. All right, Scott Hoke and Jim Furyk.
Oh, this is good names to be in the same company with.
All right, we're going to go back to that 1997 season. You've already mentioned one of them. We'll get you to mention it again. We want you to name the four major winners from 1997. The Masters is going to be a tough one to remember from 97, but maybe you'll be able to get it.
It was the year before Duval won. I mean, not Duval, I'm sorry. Year before O'Meara won, which might have been Tiger.
That's correct.
Yeah. And then Leonard won the PGA. Oh, shoot. Who won the Open?
So it was actually Leonard that won the
Leonard
Open.
Leonard won the Open. Leonard was in the final group.
Leonard won the Open. Leonard won the Open. I'm sorry. Davis won the PGA. Go. Leonard won the Open. I could have forget. I just misnamed it. Davis won the PGA with the rainbow in the background, the 72nd hole. Leonard won at Troon in the Open. I birdied the 17th hole with a body 40-footer on Sunday, as I recall.
Yes. You want to hit on the 97 U.S. Open course?
I don't recall the Open from that year.
Congressional.
I didn't play in it.
Ernie Els. That by the
another,
way,
another yeah, the Big Easy, another guy big.
Yeah,
we don't talk that 97 major winner run as much as we should.
Tiger
Davis Love, Justin Leonard, Ernie Els, Tiger Woods. Yeah,
blotted
yeah,
out
did. All right, last game to play with you if you're okay with this. So you're listed as one of the tallest golfers to ever play the game. 6'7" is what I'm hearing. Is that correct?
Before gravity started getting hold of me, yeah.
All right. Here we go. Time now for a game. Are you taller than, say, Michael Jordan?
Yes.
Correct. He's 6'6".
Correct. All right, we'll keep it going. Tom Brady. Are you taller than Mr. Tom
yes.
Brady?
Yes.
Yeah, that's correct. Tom Brady's 6'4". All righty.
How about Freddie Freeman of the Atlanta Braves, World Series champs?
I think he's 6'7", isn't he?
No.
I'm going to say, no, he's not. 6'6"?
He's 6'5".
You got him. You got him okay. by, you got him by 2 inches.
I knew he was close.
You got him by 2 inches. All right, LeBron James.
No, I don't think so.
LeBron's got you by a couple inches.
All right,
yeah,
how about
by just a little bit.
The actor Vince Vaughn, who's just batting the bunny around.
I'm taller than Vince.
Yes, he's 6'5". Good job.
What about John Thompson.
John was, I'm not taller than John Thompson.
6'9" is John Thompson. All right.
Yeah, and finally, the two guys in Europe that are taller than I that have played over there, John Thompson, do you know the other one?
Oh, I do not. Who is it?
John Isner. Back on you.
John Isner in tennis?
No, Gordon Sherry.
Gordon Sherry. Okay. Nice. Good
Gordon
one.
Gordon Sherry.
All right. Last one, big. Scott Van Pelt. Sneaky tall guy, Scott Van Pelt.
He's sneaky tall, but I got him.
You do got him. He's 6'6".
That's a cool guy. Yeah, I got him by a little bit.
Yes, you do. And Big did very well.
I'm very impressed with the knowledge. And you, I will say, you know Hyde better than just about anybody I've ever met. That was really well done.
I thought Freeman was 6'7". I knew he was really tall.
We could be wrong. We've been wrong before. It might be on us. I don't want to say you're wrong right now.
Big, it's great to see you.
Not many guys playing baseball at all. It's a big strike zone to defend.
Buddy,
it's
I miss
good to
you.
See you guys too.
I miss walking the fairways with you, pal. It's great to see you. Thanks for participating in our first ever Past Champ.
First one.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Back on Golf Today, let's take a look at who's in the race to the CME Globe. Some names you have come to know. Fantastic seasons. Jin Young Ko and Nelly Korda. They've been neck and neck for most of the last couple of months on the LPGA Tour. Lydia Ko, recent victory in Saudi Arabia. Patty Tavitanikit of UCLA, winner of the formerly known A&A Inspiration in B Park, always in the mix. But there are also some other races to be completed on the LPGA Tour. Here's the top 10 in the Vare Trophy standings for scoring average. This is worth 1 point for the Hall of Fame, by the way. 6 players ineligible, including Nelly and Jess Korda, who are ready to meet the press.
No, I actually don't even know where I stand. I just know the CME, kind of, I know I'm second in CME, and that's really, honestly, all I know that I have no chance to win the Bear Trophy. That's what I know. But no, I don't know. And honestly, I think I've always said good golf kind of solves it all, in the sense that I'm not going to worry about anything, no trophies, nothing, until I tee up that first shot and hopefully sink that last putt on the 72nd hole.
And then she also asked, did you know where you stand in terms of qualifying for the Vare Trophy? And was there any consideration in playing more events to be eligible?
No, my schedule was crazy enough. I had to pull out last minute from Portland because I just wasn't feeling well. And same with Walmart. Yes. So no, I don't think I could have played more events because my body was just so tired. I typically usually play all the events at the start of the year. And if I play well, then I'll take some time off because of the traveling, and the summer was just so crazy.
Bear Trophy is also based on scoring. And if you're not feeling great, your scoring's going to plummet.
Yeah.
But I honestly didn't even think about that until the article came out that Jinyoung and I weren't we can't qualify to win that event. Yeah. So
I didn't even know. I've been on tour for 11 years. I didn't know that there was an event minimum.
Wow.
Or round minimum, sorry.
Should that be changed?
Yeah.
Or reconsidered?
100%, especially with the way that our schedule is. But that's for other people to decide. We're just here to play.
Two of the most recognizable players on the LPGA Tour not knowing the rule. I mean, I don't know if that speaks to them not knowing the rule or the LPGA not letting players know the importance of this, especially with seven events not being on the schedule this year. Yeah. There lies the issue, is they've lost seven events, yet the minimum stays the same. And Nelly said something very interesting there. She said, you know, good golf takes care of it all, right? Well, she's played as good a golf as anybody on the LPGA Tour, and it's not going to take care of it all because there is a rule that's going to force her to not win this very, very important, prestigious award that, as you mentioned, could do something for the Hall of Fame candidacy. So it's very, very interesting to hear the players reacting to what's going down.
Think about the season that these two players, these two sisters have had, what they've done for the game of golf, traveling the world. Nelly assumes number one in the world, wins a major championship, wins Olympic gold, competes in the Solheim Cup, as does Jess. And the math just doesn't add up. You take seven events away, understandably, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but you have to adjust the number of rounds played. It just seems like simple math. I'm horrible at math, by the way, but I can see that this is a problem. And I saw these two players. I spent time with them at Baltusrol several weeks ago, and they were pooped. They were exhausted, and rightfully so. They've been traveling the world. They have been doing everything they can to better themselves, better the game. They've put in the time. And traditionally, great golf does take care of itself, but not in this case. And this is a stain. This is an error on the LPGA Tour, and it shouldn't be that way, that two of your most marketable best players had no idea that this was coming down the pike.
I go back to the Patriots' undefeated season. Remember when they went undefeated through the regular season, they run through the playoffs. The last thing you want is to have the last game, the last moment of your year be a negative.
Yeah.
For that team, that Patriots, they lose the Super Bowl, and that's what we will forever remember. You think about the Warriors being up 3-1, having that incredible historic season. What do? They lose at the end of the season. You and I have sat up here all year long and praised the LPGA Tour and praised what they've done. We've praised the product and we've praised their players. We've watched Lydia Ko come back this season. We've watched Jinyoung Ko play as good a golf as anybody in the world over the last 2 months. Nelly Korda kind of bursting on the scene earlier this year and putting herself atop the world in women's golf. She's going to be hurt by the fact that the LPGA lost events.
Yeah.
And that sure doesn't seem right. And we're talking about scoring average, D. That's what we're talking about. We're diving into scoring average here. You know what Nelly shot at the Olympics? 67, 62, 69, 69. That will
doesn't
not count.
No.
That does not count. Those are some great scoring that, again, adds to the great scoring average from her 2021. I just hate that the end of this season could end and us questioning something from the LPGA Tour after what I consider one of the great seasons in LPGA history. It feels like something that could be adjusted.
And as someone who's followed this game for 20 years plus, the Vare Trophy and the Varden Trophy, those are huge honors. And in the LPGA sense, it's for the Hall of Fame, the LPGA Hall of Fame, the hardest to get into. It would have been a remarkable feather in the cap of what has been an historic season for one of the great players of this era. And for her to even potentially have a bad taste in her mouth at the end of this season because of this. It's just a shame. I imagine the people at the LPGA, who we root for and right. cover and want the best for, will take a look at this because this is not how this should have gone down.
A lot of subjective awards in sports, and we love to debate these things. Player of the years, MVPs, MOPs, if you will. The numbers are not debatable. I mean, when you look at scoring average for a player, not for people like you and I who sit up here and talk about golf, but for the actual player, knowing you led a tour, a professional tour, the biggest professional tour out there, in scoring average for an entire season is something you can hang your hat on. And maybe it's not as big a deal to golf fans, but it's an enormous deal to the players out there. And to kind of lose an opportunity at taking this home, to kind of cap off your season, to cap off the breakthrough year you had, to cap off a year where you win a major championship and you win a gold medal, it is a true, true bummer. And again, I hope this gets adjusted. I feel like we said similar stuff around Sofia Popoff and what she did after that open victory, and it was adjusted. So hopefully this gets adjusted, but it is a bummer for Nelly and Jin Young and MB, who are going to be battling this.
A big lost storyline at the Pelican and CME Group Tour Championship as well. That's a loss. Still a lot to watch and appreciate this week on golf. The Asia Pacific Women's Amateur. You got Dubai Championship, Pelican Women's Championship, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Houston Open, and the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. Thank goodness for those sponsors.
Back on golf today, news of the day. The European Tour will be renamed the DP World Tour beginning next season. You see, the prize money will pass $200 million minimum, 47 tournaments in 27 different countries. Expanded Rolex Series comprised of five events, three tournaments co-sanctioned with the PGA Tour. All that starts November 25th, 2021. We've heard some from some big names around the European Tour. Let's hear from Graham McDowell.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exciting. You know, I think the European Tour has had a tough couple of years due to COVID. With its international format, it's been very, very difficult for players and sponsors and for events to happen around the world. So I'm happy for Keith and the whole team there at the European Tour to get a sponsor like DP World on board and to really kind of take that take the tour back up a notch and have a strong worldwide presence again.
How encouraging it, along with the alliance with the PGA Tour and the co-sanctioned events, moving forward after everything we've been through the last 2 years?
Yeah, listen, it's been a really interesting 2 years for golf. I mean, with COVID, with, you know, international competition, shall we say, with, you know, the Saudi Golf Federation involved. I mean, there's just, you know, competition. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. It's good for the sport. It's making everyone get better. It's making the PGA Tour continue to get better. And as you can see from the European Tour's point of view, they're trying to grow and they're trying to get better and better as well. So it's great for the players. It's great for, you know, it's great for the viewers at home, for the sport of golf. I mean, obviously COVID has created you know, an opportunity for people to come back to the game and get participation going again. So, you know, with the professional products getting better and better, I think it's very exciting to be one of the players.
Graham McDowell, major champ, is 42. David Duval, major champ, is 50 years old today. Won the Players, won the Open. Friend of our program was with us just a few days ago.
November 2nd, episode 12 of the Golf Today podcast. You can listen to David Duval talk all about turning 50 in Champs Tour. So check out the podcast if you haven't done it already.
Happy birthday, Double D. Talks about how much he loves playing in the PNC Championship in Orlando. Also, going to be competing in some big names in the 50 and over set. Some players recently turned or approaching 50. There's some ballers. Justin Leonard, Dota Begay, Robert Dameron.
What are your thoughts on the birthday song? Honest thoughts on the song. I mean, I'm anti-sing. I don't like it. Anybody singing it. I got
like
a birthday.
It?
My birthday's in, what, 3 days? No, you don't.
Oh,
I don't need
man.
You to sing. Ever sing it to me.
Are you more of a happy birthday to you? Happy birthday to
well,
you.
Anything you sing is going to sound better
okay.
than most songs.
Stevie Wonder.
But I'm not a happy birthday song guy. I kind of hum along when people
okay.
sing around.
I'm shook by that.
I'm just telling you.
I'm like, I love the song.
Not my favorite song. It's time for the 19th hole.
You like Lamborghinis?
Did you see this, Austin Ertz? That's a 2-year lease of a Lamborghini. She goes, I'd never even stepped foot in one. Now I'm going to give it a test drive. No, no, you're not. You're going to be driving it for 2 years. That's not a test drive when you get it for a couple years.
But it's not like 10 years, 2 years. You're just breaking it in.
Now, can you put golf clubs in a Lamborghini? That's a question I need to ask people.
I don't know
that
about
have
the Trump space. Yeah.
Lamborghinis. Can you put a set of clubs in there? And remember, this is a staff bag, too.
staff bag. Now, maybe a Sunday bag can fit with you, but
it'd be really tough to get a staff bag in there. But congrats to Austin Ernst. That was very awesome. 147 yards he holed out from.
Worth it. 2-year lease on a Lambo. Our question, social question. This was yesterday, so we brought it back for, because you call it a redux, a redo. What is the worst shot you've hit in your life, and what was the scenario? Best responses make the show 2 days in a row.
Yeah, people like to talk about their golf games. They like to talk about the good. They also love to talk about the bad. Ryan said, I hit a cab. I mean, he could have stopped there, Ryan. You could have stopped there. I hit a cab with people in it. Hooked it through a chain-linked fence off the tee. Sounded like a shotgun when I hit it. I hid behind a tree.
That's poetry. Ryan is a writer, by the way. I love the details in that
I hit
tweet.
A cab.
So good with people in it. This is Mike saying, was invited to Baltusrol when I just started playing. So nervous on the first tee that I hit under the ball and went straight backwards.
Wait.
About 10 feet.
Like the Phil shot? It went backwards?
Not a trick shot, though. This was just a poorly struck shot. That's embarrassing.
I've never
to recover from that.
I've never seen this before.
You're still away.
10 yards backwards. Peter said, I'm a lefty. What up, Peter? Love you. Hitting second shot, approached the 18th at the Ocean Course using a hybrid. Don't just fade it, but dead push slice. Goes way left into the porch where onlookers are ducking for cover as the ball rattles between the floor and the roof. It was awkward coming off 18, to say the least. I would, in fact, agree.
It's at this point where I mentioned that I hit to the Old Course Hotel on 17.
You did,
and there were hear like the clanking.
You know what? I hit the hotel before.
You did too.
Oh yeah. Getting aggressive.
Hitting
the three wood, trying to take on too much. The few times I've ever hit the fairway on 17 at the Old Course, I thought it was in the hotel. That's how far right.
Well, you have
to hit. And I'll say this as a caddy, and this is the truth. If you were struggling,
yes,
and I was looping for you around the Old Course, I'm sending them basically to one green.
Yeah,
I'm aiming you so far left. They're going, oh, I've heard all the stories of over the O.
Which O is it?
And over the D. And I'm like, no, you want to go left of that for sure.
Such a bummer to be playing well. I played well for basically 16 holes, and then I got up there, and it's just like, let me take a picture of your buddies just standing behind it. Oh, great. And I hit a moonshot, not good.
Yeah, there's a couple places you can lose golf balls late in the round there.
Yes.
I saw people hit it out of play on 18 as well. The biggest bummer, though, was if somebody hit it out of play on one. If somebody hit it left or right on one out of bounds, I knew it was going to be a very, very long 5 hours.
It's a pretty big fairway.
Got room.
118.
Got room. Sometimes crosswinds make it tough.
This is a lot of fun. We had a lot of big news today. Game of golf.
News day.
Growing. Big news day.
Do it tomorrow as well.
Should we come back tomorrow?
We'll do it tomorrow.
We'll see.
I got a big question to ask you tomorrow on the show.
Tease.